What up, what up, what up? It's the On Deck TV podcast, episode 301s, holding it down in the 300s. Welcome to the 300 Club, man. The first one that we're going to do, well, probably the second since this is episode 301, Hip Hop Docs. Wu-Tang just came out with the Mics and Men documentary. We were thoroughly intrigued. We enjoyed it. So what we're going to do is talk about some of our favorite hip-hop documentaries. And by we, I do mean Animal Brown, the On Deck TV podcast. It's only we can do it. We appreciate you guys joining us. Also, man, this episode is brought to you guys again by Beard Organics. Beard Organics is a company that provides handcrafted beard oil products. We're committed to producing the best pure and natural grooming products to keep you looking your best at all times. We promise bringing you the best beard organic and 100% all natural products by using only ingredients from suppliers that meet our top quality assurance standards. Our beard oil formulas are handcrafted using high quality natural ingredients that promote health and strengthen your beard. Our products are cruelty free and are never tested on animals. Use the offer code ONDECKTV for your 10% off. You have to spend a minimum of $4.99. I'll tell you, the beard oils work. They smell good. Your lady will love you long time for it. Go on there for your guy. Get them, ladies. And if you want your beard just looking great, guys, go on there and get it. That's beardorganics.com. Also, go to realvillemedia.com. Check out all of the podcasts on the website.
Absolutely, man. The podcasts include Full Sport Press. Shout out Jay Hove, Big Jeff, and How Weezy. Their latest episode is up. They're doing the top 10 players of the NBA playoffs. I better have a Piston in there. That's all I know.
Yeah, man.
Also, Fresh for Dummies podcast. Me and the homie Jay Hove talking big boy fashion shit every 1st and 15th of the month. Now, let's not waste any more time. Let's get to this rap shit. What it do, what the business is.
It is another week in the books. It's the On Deck TV podcast. I am Spike Lou.
Man, holler at your boy Animal Brown, Animal_Brown, if you're looking for me on social media. And make sure where you at.
Crickets.
Ah, man, he on vacation.
He went to go thot it out in Miami.
He thotting and bopping.
He bashed Miami for Memorial Day for 3 minutes on this podcast.
Yep.
And he's out thotting.
And left us hanging.
Shout out to him extra, man.
Absolutely. I cut you off. Where are you at on social if anybody's looking for you?
No one is, but I'm there. I am Spike Lou. Join me in the Wash Twitter crowd and the Wash Instagram crowd. I'm going to start going live more.
Okay.
I may do that. I may start going IG live more.
Let me know when you do so I can turn my phone off.
I'm gonna add you in. You know you can add people in.
I'm not looking at you on live, dude.
I'm gonna add you in. For you. I'm gonna do my little live.
Nope.
How people do.
What you have on deck for the weekend?
I came across Jemele Hill's new podcast called The Undisputed. She has some fire interviews on there.
Undisputed.
Unbothered.
Excuse here we go.
Me. Damn. Go check that out. That was fire. I finally watched the first episode of Chernobyl.
Okay.
Chernobyl. It was okay.
They're gassing it right now.
It's a very slow burn, but I could see it building up to be like one of them 7-episode like fire miniseries. So
you let me know when it gets good.
I will. I'm going to check out episode 2 through the holiday weekend. What did you have up?
Man, not too much this weekend. I forgot to mention, I went to the ball game last week, Braves and Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the Cardinals are that bad or if the Braves are that good, but the Braves dog walked them. And I don't follow baseball enough to know which is which.
Yeah, they swept them, I think, the series.
They were killing them. We left in the 7th inning. Like, this is old. It was like 10-1. Shit was crazy.
Game was cool, though. Stadium, you like it?
Yeah, no, the new stadium lit up. You know what I'm saying? They got a nice little history walkthrough that you can kind of look at all the players and retired jerseys and shit. It's real nice. Mm. Real nicely put together. And it was bobblehead night, so I had to leave with something.
Bobblehead night.
Absolutely. Whoever that player was, I don't know who that is. Yo. Some Bob Donaldson, Josh Robertson. Ronald, you don't know either.
I don't.
As you can tell, we don't watch baseball.
You botched the last name. Butchered, however you say it. Episode 300, man. The event. Sold out dates, booked and busy.
Hey, dude. The RSVPs are gone.
Gone.
That quick.
Gone.
Gone with the Wind. Gone in 60 seconds.
Jesus.
Shout out to everybody who RSVP'd. Thank you, June 15th. If you didn't hear, it's going down, but now it's too late.
Is there
going
to be like a little special list for the people that didn't get to do it?
Who knows, man? You got to stay tuned.
We don't know yet.
You got to stay tuned to that out.
We may. That's why I haven't responded to those texts yet. So, you know. Hey, man, I didn't get an RSVP.
Hey, man, you snooze, you loot. Nah, you just check back with us. Listen to the podcast. You never know. We may possibly have some additional.
This is what we'll say. Everyone that wants to see the 300 episode, we're going to make sure that we service you guys.
Okay.
Let's do that.
That'll work. I like that.
We'll make sure that we service all the on-deckers out there that are committed to it. All
right, man. Let's get to this this episode. We're talking hip-hop documentaries. But first, we got to get to some news. Dr. Dre and Nipsey. All right. So if you've been following Dr. Dre on social media, man, he was caught posing next to a Nipsey Hussle painting in studio with the Game. Now, Dr. Dre, he passed on Nipsey Hussle back in the day when he was trying to get his name out there, and they never really rocked together before. Now, the internet is going ham right now, calling Dre a clout chaser. What do you think? Is this accurate?
Absolutely not. I'm sure if Dr. Dre could see the future, he would have signed a lot more artists outside of Nipsey Hussle. If he knew how big that he was going to be. I feel like that we should let Dre mourn just as we've let Game come up with the stories that his son was telling him to play Nipsey Hussle and do all of these things. And we also should let Khaled celebrate Nipsey Hussle however he wants to. I think the problem is people are saying, well, I wouldn't do this way if I were Dr. Dre, so he's clout chasing. And that's not necessarily the truth. You rarely see Dr. Dre, and when he does come out, it's not for clout chasing. Dr. Dre has been in billion-dollar deals. Not that this has to do anything with money, but it does have to do with notoriety. No one is going to look at Dr. Dre different if he takes his picture with Nipsey Hussle or if he doesn't. Like, he ain't got no more good in the hood. Like, there's no clout that Dr. Dre can chase. Now, being in the picture with Game kind of take away from it because we know what Game does, but to say that Dr. Dre doesn't have the respect for Nipsey Hussle or doesn't respect the Game, I just don't agree with that. I don't think that he's coming from a place of everybody's talking about this right now. Let me go take a picture with him. Dr. Dre, he doesn't have to do that. Like, he doesn't get anything. It doesn't add to his name anything for doing that. So I think it's more of the internet culture that wants to hop in with a take or that wants to get somebody out of here, that wants to cancel people. You rarely hear from Dr. Dre. He's not going to come defend himself and not say that this is the case. So an easy target. It's easy to say, oh, he's this and he's that. And I just don't see that.
So first, we need to go to the Urban Dictionary for the definition of clout chaser.
Let's do it.
Clout chaser, a person who tries to feed off others' popularity to benefit themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, by that definition, this was 100% clout chasing. Mm. YG and Master P have both expressed similar sentiments lately in separate interviews.
Okay.
They both said that people are waving the Nipsey Hussle flag that he really didn't rock with.
Okay.
They didn't name names, but when you take a look at this, mm-hmm. and again, Nipsey is on record saying that Dre wasn't fucking with him. And there's nothing wrong with him not fucking with him. Like, that's a mistake. You know what I'm saying? Dre was in the middle of a billion-dollar Beats deal. I wouldn't be talking to no rappers either if I had those in front of me, different color headphones that were going to set me for life for generations to come.
Right.
I don't want to hear your CD either.
Right.
However, don't come on here posing next to the little painting that you got, a little one of one, and then act as if y'all were best BFFs the whole time. This is how you address that.
All
if you're
did
Dre,
was take a picture, though.
Nah, but you know what you're insinuating. All you have to do, if you're Dre, you take this photo, put it on IG, and in the caption, you say, you do an open letter to Nipsey Hussle, dude. Mm-hmm. Listen, I know, you know what I mean? I never.
Now, you want to talk about clout chasing?
No, you have to address the elephant in the room.
There is one. There is not an elephant in
the
room.
Do the internet say that there's a big ass elephant
Listen,
in the room?
I'm a hip hop legend if I'm Dr. Dre. I do this. You can credit me for being a hand in creating all of this. you can do that going back to NWA. So for me to pay my respects to someone who is a very large presence in this culture, to me, have seen this happen before with Tupac, there's no way that I'm on here like, well, let me do this because everyone's talking about it. Like, he know what Lauren is going. Like, this happened to him.
Right.
He was cool with Pac. And not to say that they were best friends when Pac died. Like, I understand the beef that happened, but he seen and was there when this happened to another young man. All he's doing is addressing the situation is, hey,
no.
I took this picture. I have enough money to get this one of one. This guy at the bottom, J.C. Hill, that guy, I'm promoing him. I may have made a mistake with Nipsey. I'm not making a mistake with the artist. I'm not making a mistake of not being around or at least showing my sentiments of how I feel about this or my condolences by taking this picture. I don't think that any way Dre doesn't, he don't benefit from this. Like, new artists ain't coming to say, well, I want to work with Dre now. He took this picture with Nipsey. If anything, he's smart enough to know taking this picture would receive backlash.
Then again, if he was smart enough to know that, then he should have entered in just a handful of characters in the damn caption, and he would have been Gucci. And he could have donated a little 20-piece to the STEM facility that he got going on, and no one would be running your name through the grave. Now you're sitting here working on detox, and when that shit does drop eventually, when we're 50, people are going to remember how you clout chased when Nipsey passed, and you're going to look like a clown, and nobody's going to want to buy your product anymore.
I'm going to jump out on a ledge and say this doesn't even come up if Game's not in this picture. And I would have been, if I'm Dre, the only thing that I'm doing differently here, hey, Jason, hey, scoot over, bro. Just a little bit. Yeah, we're going to get you in there on the next one, but scoot over just a little bit all the way out of this picture so people won't take this the wrong way.
Nobody's
the problem
tripping on
is Game is in the picture.
Because
he do this. He does this every game. He has no shame in clout chasing. Like, this is what I do. This is the reason that I'm relevant right now is clout chasing. Yes, I'm going to chase people and knock them out. I'm going to do anything funny to be relevant on the internet. Yes, I'm clout chasing if I'm Game. This is exactly what I'm doing. If I'm Dr. Dre, I have no reason to.
Game is doing a post today about Nipsey. So he says until it's the end of time, and no one has batted an eye.
No one
has done anything but they gave him respect and props for that.
Man,
Dre took
that's
picture.
That's full of shit, man.
And we're looking at Dre like, man, get the fuck out. You look old and washed, bro.
People
that Dre has shit to sell eventually, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but eventually at some point Dre will be selling something.
Game does too. People just ain't buying it. Like, that's the reason he got to post every day about Nipsey. Like, people not buying what you selling no more, dude. So let me go over here. That's clout chasing right there.
They was actually cool though. So
that's cool. That's
they actually have records together, man, at worst.
Listen, man, how many niggas is Dre cool with?
I mean,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
people, he shot his shit at Dre and it didn't work.
I'm not going to fault Dr. Dre for not working with Nipsey while he was alive.
No, there's no fault at that, though. But that's just him not having the vision and seeing what Nipsey became.
And that's cool. A lot of people miss out on visions.
And that's fair. Don't take a picture. Don't pose next to the damn photo as if you're paying homage now. That's whack,
man.
Bro,
that's like a nigga coming to us and saying, hey, you know what? I got an idea for a podcast. I'm like, oh, yeah, cool story, bro. He do his podcast, he's successful, we're successful, and 15 years from now, something dramatically happens to him, and we can't take a picture next to his picture.
No, we'll be clout chasing, even in 15 years, 2035, or
that's
whatever
sick.
The fuck year that'll
that
be.
That is sick. That's
it'll
sick.
Be a new term for it.
I don't see the point in that.
That's fake love, dog. Drake rapped about that.
That's fake, toxic, macho masculinity. You can't, like, you're trying to say that he can't show, like, he may genuinely feel sorry that Nipsey Hussle's not. I'm sure he does. Feel sorry that he's not here.
A lot of people
and
do.
Dr. Dre is not he's a socially awkward fellow. He may think that this is cool, and I don't, like, if he had a track record for doing stuff like this, like Game, then I would definitely see what you're saying, but Dr. Dre doesn't. I think that if he even thought this, he would shy away from taking the picture.
That means he's out of touch, is what I'm saying.
He may be that. Now we're talking about another thing. I ain't definitely going to argue on that.
All right, let's keep it on the internet. DaBaby, my favorite rapper right now.
That's probably everybody. He's the media darling right now.
Yeah, I was on him. How long ago was that?
Oh, fuck me.
He's been tied to two videos lately involving altercations. Now, one hit TMZ the other day, which showed his security beating up an allegedly overzealous fan who was asking for a picture, resulting in the man being in a coma, all right? Now, a second incident occurred in a mall in Charlotte when an underground independent artist was sort of mocking DaBaby on Instagram.
Oh, he rapped?
Yeah. But he ended up catching an L in the middle of the mall. Now, with DaBaby's stock as high as it's probably ever been right now, will these incidents help or hurt him in the long run?
In the long run, they're going to hurt him. And the reason, I don't know, first of all, I'm not sure, like, he probably one of the luckiest people alive as far as just media and coverage and things that can happen. Things that can happen from what the events is that he created. Now, listen, what I would say is this. It's dangerous to have this false sense of bravado that you're going to come out on top of all of these situations. He's killed a man, beaten a man into a coma, knocked a man out in the Louis V store, walked away from a neighborhood in which they said he shouldn't have been there, but he was able to politic his way out.
Right.
At some point in time, you started to develop this false sense of security and this machoism as to, I'm the baby, I can do this. And it's cool and it's fun at first until you run into a nigga that ain't as goofy as the nigga was in the Louis Vuitton store. It ain't gonna let you politic with them like you politicked in their neighborhood. There's somebody that's gonna take it more serious than you are, because at the end of the day, for him, this attributes to his rap career.
Right.
It ain't got nothing to do with anything outside of that. He may run into somebody one day that's willing to take it further than he is. And I don't want, and I think he can rap. I think he's very talented. And at this point in time, he don't need the media shenanigans to get to where he needs to get. So I do think that this is going to take away from him in the long run if he thinks that he's able to continue to come on top in these situations. At some point in time, whether he's manufacturing these situations or not, it's going to be somebody that'd be like, you know what, I want to try my luck. And it's going to be one time where he like, you know what, I came out on top before, I'm going to continue to come out on top. And it ain't going to end well for nobody. So I don't think that he has to do this anymore. He can stop with the media shenanigans. He can find a way to avoid these situations, because, like, they don't, like, you can avoid that Louis Stowe situation, to be completely honest with you. And he has the talent at this point in his career and the buzz to be able to leave that shit alone.
And part of the buzz is this shit right here.
100%.
I don't know about helping him in the long term, but in the short term, 100%, absolutely.
He's people's favorite rapper right now.
Is adding stripes to his name. Shout out to me. I've been on him for months now. I tried to tell you, you want to listen. That's
again,
fine.
Again, you said this.
This happens all the time.
Were you on him when we seen him at Revolt in the diaper?
First of all, he wasn't at Revolt. He was at South by Southwest. Well,
he was somewhere in the diaper.
No, I wasn't on him at that point. He wasn't making the music that he was making. Now, here's the thing. A street rapper doing street things that doesn't get you locked up will always end up in a W. People like authentic artists. They like their artists to be about what they say they're about. And in each one of these situations that we've named, he has not started any of this shit.
It ain't about the
Walmart shooting. The dude came up to him with the pistol. The two dudes came up to him with this Louis V. The dude was mocking him while he was in line trying to buy some shit. So there nothing. Even the video of him fighting the dude in the concert. The dude came up to him and tried to fight him, and then he got knocked out. So like, dude, this nigga's like Thug. Listen, when the BET Awards came out and Thug of the Year category is up, this nigga got that hands down.
I tell you, you only get so many wins, dude.
Like, he is shutting up, but he's taken L's before. That's the thing. That comes with the territory.
Just last week, we were talking about YFN Lucci truck getting shot up and him needing to move to wherever the guys know where the fuck you want to.
And then his video got shot up a couple days later.
It did. What, just a couple days ago again, some shit got shot up.
Which is why he needs to move.
What's the difference between him and Lil Baby to you? Because it seems as if you're commending Lil Baby for this, but just last week you're telling me YFN Lucci needs to move to Alaska.
No, I'm saying that I like when people back up what it is that they talk about. And I'm not saying no bully shit. That would be corny. But again, in each one, in literally every situation, somebody has started. They came up to him at the video shoot, dude. He wasn't standing right there like, anybody come fuck with me, I'm King Kong. He wasn't doing that.
We've seen, though, with Nipsey Hussle, brother, streets do not care who's right and who's wrong, who's like, at some point in time, he not going to be the nigga that win. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair.
And like what you said last week, if he continuously puts himself in this situation, then it's more likely than not that shit going to happen sooner rather than later. All I'm saying is if YFN Lucci need to move town, this nigga need to watch where the fuck he going. Like, how you keep running into this shit?
That's a fact.
How a nigga run up on you in Walmart and you got to kill him?
Yeah,
like,
but that was before a lot of shows, for a deal.
That's absolutely true. Well, to that point, if a nigga like, how you running up on a nigga flat out in the LV store though? Like, come on, bro.
First of all, who knew they had a Louis V store in Charlotte?
No, I don't do Charlotte like that.
I didn't know that.
Charlotte, though.
That's what I'm saying.
Charlotte's legit.
I haven't been to Charlotte in years, but I didn't know they had a fucking Louis store though.
It's legit.
They shaking it then, but. I will say this, though, and this rings true. This was the fact back when Eazy-E said it. Any pub is good pub. I'm not going to say any because, I mean, if you get like a rape charge, and you're donezo. But 98% of pub is good pub, and especially in this day of social media. Like, this is – people don't even need to know your record now. Your music, your name can be bigger than that shit, and that can hold way more weight.
Shout out Black Youngster.
That's what I'm saying. And so people, you can get endorsements. It's so many revenue streams. He is going to cook. He's going to be on the cover of XXL. He's a fucking lock if he doesn't pass it off. You know what I'm saying? And shout out to me for calling it. That's really the moral of all of this. Shout out to me for calling him months ago. I tried to tell niggas, now you see videos and shit on YouTube and Louis V stores, and now he's the realest rapper walking. Listen, guys, I said this, okay? Listen to Animal Brown next time.
I just want him to be careful. That's all.
I do, too.
I just want him to be careful.
I do, too. But, I mean, just because a nigga finish shit and he not start nothing, like, what you ain't going to do?
I'm not even engaging with a nigga like that, man. Like, I got – that's why a nigga 6'5", 300 pounds is with me. I ain't even recording it, nigga. You just going
to
lay there.
But back to the video in Louis V, though.
Yeah, that, see, and that like, almost seemed like
– nah, no, it didn't.
Man, listen, bro.
When they turned – the funniest
this
part,
this nigga
–
this was the one of the goofiest niggas on earth. Look at the baby, y'all. Look at him. Man, bro, don't nobody. Like, especially a nigga that's ready to fight. Like, if you're ready to fight, you ain't doing all that goofy. Like, look at the baby, y'all. He looked like the type of dude that would have got knocked out.
Now, the funniest part, though, when the baby had the phone on him, and he was like, where you going, bro? He backing up, tripping over the little table and shit. He tried to whip his phone out like that was going to protect him from getting whooped. Like, that was Captain America's shield or something. Like, nigga, like, no, dude. You're not going to record none of it. None of this will matter, dude. You might have to take his L.
And I don't, like, see.
This was unbelievable, dude.
It was almost like a sketch.
It was. Like, that, no, that's a fact. Because you, this, but see, this has happened before. We just don't see it on video.
Yeah, people always are trying
people.
To antagonize.
That's what I'm
like,
saying. And
they've
got
people,
whooped.
So. That's, that was the only reason why I'm like, it may not be fake. Because people do this to famous people. I've seen it happen before.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And you also said trolling was going to hit an all-time low this year in your prediction, and you were completely wrong because it's at an all-time high, if
anything.
Nah,
celebrity troll. Who you calling the troll?
Oh, you talking about because you saying coming from the person
yeah,
that's owned.
Yeah, the big person. Not
okay.
I said Tekashi, yo, was going to kill it for his people.
Gotcha.
The niggas like him going to forever exist. that nigga that got knocked out in Charlotte.
Man. All right, moving on. YG, he dropped his fourth album entitled For Real, For Real over the weekend. After two solid projects, his first two albums, We Land Base at that Stay Dangerous album last year. It wasn't hitting on nothing. Did he bounce back with this For Real project?
Yep. I think YG is continuing. Even though the last album wasn't as good as the first one, to me, YG, one of the best storytellers in album, like putting together an album, making it sound cohesive. He's one of the best that we have of the new generation. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. People like to attribute the wild antics and the crazy dressing to YG. It's like the white socks
and church shoes
and white socks. I like the song, too.
Yep.
But I do think that YG is solidifying himself as to why record labels pay him so much attention. I know sometimes people ask are not fans of YG, well, why you see so many YG videos and why is he so popping and this and that? Because I think that he fits the bill every time. And even though I didn't like the second album, the people that fuck with YG really heavy and West Coast people seem to fuck with that album heavy.
Which one, Stay Dangerous?
Yeah.
That's his third.
Excuse me, third.
Yeah.
I just feel like that YG's able to bring it every time that he comes out with something that's YG, and I think that he fits California well. That's the reason he was able to take around the approach to this album and it be popping.
Yeah.
But I like this album. I like what he's doing.
I do like this album too, and I definitely think it was a bounce back. I think what people are looking for is that debut album that he came out with, that My Crazy Life. Yeah, I think you can cancel meeting those expectations from here on out. That's just not fair of him. He's going to be one of those artists where his first project is his best, and that's okay. It happens to a lot of people. But I do like this project. I think he's got some good records on here, though. Like, what's the name of the joint? The Heart to Heart with Meek is probably his wife.
Like
that's probably his best verse ever.
Man, it's a fire verse.
I even like some of the up-tempo, like, dance records and shit. Like, I'm not mad at that.
It's not as perfect.
It's good hooks. Those joints are going to be perfect for the little Compton cookouts out west or Bompton bookout or, you know, whatever side of the fence you fall on with that. I think he's got some good records on here, and it's much better than that Stay Dangerous. And this is about as close to as good as we're going to get with YG. Like, I don't see him continuing to ascend. I see him kind of plateauing about right here, which I'm not mad at.
But in West Coast fashion, though, right here is, like, I think another solid 10 years, though.
10?
Yeah, like he took E-40, right? YG going to be around for a long time. If I think he think those people on his album a little bit more talented than they are. Them features were Nathaniel.
Yeah. He had some questionable features on there.
He had some slaw features on there.
He had some slaw singles.
Features.
The
You hate that single.
The Go Loco with Tiger, that's trash.
I mean, it's Tiger.
That is, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's trash. The Stop Snitching, bitch, nigga, snitch, nigga, that's terrible, bro. Like, that is a shitty song, dude. I get it. You trying to throw shots at Tekashi.
Snitch, nigga, snitch, nigga.
That shit is trash.
That's some YG shit, nigga.
That's some trash shit. But he's got some bangers on there, though. Like, I'm not going to lie.
I like YG.
YG is cool. I feel like when he wants to, he actually can rap. But then the gap in between when he's ripping a verse and when he's some slaw is so wide. It's like, bro, like, why is it such a big difference? When you right here and then and on some of the mother songs, though, he ain't talking about shit.
Sometimes
though.
He show up and don't care. Yeah, that is.
Are we sure he writing all that?
Don't do YG like that.
That's the only thing that can make me think of why would it be so different though? Cause he got some slaw ass verses on there, dude.
He does.
Like, he got some struggle boys, but that Heart to Heart is fucking fire though.
It is.
He's killing that. So I'm like,
I feel like that he's one of those rappers though that on a heart to heart song where you're talking about real shit, he's able to tap into a different space than just being technical. Like, I just got to rhyme, do 16 or some. I feel like YG's approach is gonna be different than he going in there able to spit real shit because he a real nigga.
For sure.
Being like, oh, this is a club song. I got to do a club verse. I got to do the up-tempo. Yeah, I got to make sure people get it. I think that's a thought process that he goes to. I think that he is creative. He's in that enough of creative space to where he goes through that, and I think that he's able to put more towards that stuff that we like with the heart-to-heart stuff.
Yeah,
other shit he just don't give a fuck about.
And I like some of the songs got more layers than a lot of people think too, man. Good features, good arrangements and shit. It's actually a solid
story
project.
With his project all the time.
Yeah, I get to him, man. It's nice bounce back from UYG because that's that Dangerous wasn't nothing at all. Before we get to this music break, man, RZA. We got to talk a little bit about the Wu-Tang documentary. Now, we've all seen the fire-ass Wu-Tang doc series. Spoiler alert for those who didn't finish episode 4, they go into details.
Ahead.
Yeah, skip ahead if you want to.
You wasn't even going
to
give them a chance to skip ahead.
Absolutely
y'all
not.
What all of this.
They go into detail about the $2 million Wu album that came out a couple of years ago. Now, it turns out that RZA linked up with an international underground rapper that he met while touring several years back. And they were the masterminds of the project, and the actual members of Wu-Tang weren't aware of what they were recording verses for. They ended up being paid a couple of thousand for the project, only to find out that it got turned into a $2 million album. Now, after seeing how RZA handled that, did that make you look at him differently?
Absolutely not. I think from how they started the documentary and how he put together the Wu-Tang, being the brains behind the situation. Mm-hmm. He's always been acknowledged as the leader of the Wu-Tang Clan. By the time that they had gotten to the place where this $2 million album was being made and recorded, it took 5 years to collect all of the verses and to put it together. They even said on the documentary, we didn't hear 36 Chambers. We was just doing verses. We didn't know what RZA was putting together. He was on some mad scientist shit.
Right.
I feel like RZA's he's a forward thinker, and I credit the deal that they got with Loud Records.
Yep,
I credit just the Wu-Tang mixing the culture of the Asian and black culture like that with the rap, and just how he did everything was innovative. And I think that held through and true to this. I don't think that the rest of those guys were at a place where they could process what he was trying to do, and they would sell it as an art piece.
Right.
Like, I feel like, and I heard Ghostface say, if we knew that it was going to be an album, I would have asked for more money.
Of course.
Because I knew that you were going to be using this verse, which take away completely from what we're doing anyway. So I feel like he has a legitimate reason not letting those guys know what he's doing with it because of what the end piece of it was going to be, and that would have taken away from what it was as far as art. If y'all know, if they knew what they were going into as far as doing this, it takes away from the art of it, in my opinion. It takes away from the value of it. It takes away from what they're able to tell people about it. It takes away from the exclusive, from it being exclusive.
Yeah.
Because RZA putting it all together, him sitting in the room doing it, the guy that sold it with him, and then Martin Shkreli, who he sold it to,
yeah,
those are the three people that really really know the context of the album. If I tell you going into it, hey, I'm putting the album together, this is what I'm thinking, then you're able to have interviews, do shows, and talk about, hey, what you think is on the album. They're not able to do that, which makes me able to drive my price up and get them $2 million for it.
Yeah.
So I think that that's how he originally even started with presenting Wu-Tang to people, like, yeah, this is a group, but these are 10 different people that I'm presenting to you. So when an offer comes, they're able to negotiate themselves outside of being Wu-Tang. Right. That's all he did here.
Okay. First of all, and I think I said this when we talked about this on the show a couple years ago when it happened, but I'm going to say it again. The idea itself of a one-of-one album as an art piece sold for millions of dollars was fucking genius. Mm-hmm. That's first and foremost.
Fire.
Let's get that out the way. But from all accounts, just looking at the documentary from the outside looking in, RZA seemed like a solid dude, especially to the Wu, because they were his friends
right.
and family in some instances. So, and we saw that he let them go out of their deals. He said, "I just want the Wu-Tang as a collective, but y'all can go get y'all deals. Y'all can you talk to any veteran artist in the game, it's not that simple to get let out of your deal. Like, it's never been that easy, dude. Mm-hmm. We done seen people go on campaigns, free me, I'm not putting shit out, complain on social media, retire, the whole nine. So that's what was confusing about how he handled it. Why wouldn't you just tell people what you got going up your sleeve, dude? That doesn't mean everybody's going to go on Breakfast Club and spoil it and do all that. You can still do that, and people can still get a decent amount of money off of it, and you can still eat off of it. I'm sure Riz is straight.
Yeah, but it takes away from it overall. And I tell you
what, I don't know how, though.
But so there was a clip in there, and we talked about this off mic, and I'll bring it up here to kind of get to the point of how. In one of those clips, Ghostface was talking to, what's RZA's brother's name?
Genius? Jizzle? Oh, no, his brother. His brother. Yeah, the dude on the boat.
Light-skinned dude with the boat.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but dude, his brother.
He's talking to him.
Who was a business partner.
Who's a business partner. And Ghostface is talking to him. He's like, bruh, if I go out and I get a $1 million deal, and you ain't got nothing to do with it, but just because I'm with Wu-Tang and you provided me with this opportunity of being Wu-Tang, I should get my $4 million instead of $800,000 and you taking $200,000 out for processing or finder's fee or whatever the fuck you charging me $200,000. And he didn't understand that process.
Yeah.
So as a leader, RZA has to know who he's dealing with. So you have a point in saying you can tell niggas what you got up your sleeve and you can bring them into the fold. But if they've already shown you that they can't handle or process that information, you on the leader are failing them. If you're trying to get to where you're trying to get to and say that $2 million, because you know he going to leak it. Because he don't even get the small thing on why I'm taking a percentage out of your million. Like, yeah, you think that I'm the reason that you're broke. Nigga, I'm the reason that you made millions of dollars.
Right.
So if I see a nigga thinking that way, then I'm not going to tell him either. Like, I'm not going to hide anything from him on the sense of, if you think you should make more money off this, then let's have a conversation and discuss it on the back end. I would totally hold it against him with the thought in my mind that the way that I'm saying I'm a real nigga is, if you want to discuss it with me once you find out it's sold for $2 million, then let's talk about it. I ain't going to hide from you. I ain't going to run from you. Tell me what you think you deserve from me, and let's talk about what I feel like I should give you from it. We can negotiate from that point. But if I feel like it's going to fuck up my $2 million on the front end, if I tell you, no, I'm not telling you. And that's me looking out for you as a homeboy. That's me looking out for the business, because you've shown that you can't handle that. So yeah. I ain't doing my job as the person that I'm supposed to be if I give you that information and you fuck it up. You fuck up the church money.
Yeah, because he didn't understand that at all.
He didn't get it. He was like, I need my the whole $1 million. Yeah. Like, bro.
No, it's not. But here's the thing. They're dealing with family and friends. If you were dealing with people that weren't family and friends, you'd be getting $500,000 out of that.
Yeah.
And your ass would have a clue. You wouldn't have a clue that it was $1 million involved. Might not even get that.
One of the biggest things. Exactly. You don't even know that it was $1 million. They only told you it was $750. You're cut off $750.
Right.
And they took their $250 out the top and they getting their percentage.
Right.
But that's a whole nother story for another episode. What this documentary did show me is a lack of communication that people have, especially black men that are friends, that go into business with each other. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to have conversations, painful conversations, awkward conversations, at least have the conversations for the sake of your friendship, for the sake the business. Because a lot of those times, those guys, when I seen that they were, when ODB was beefing with RZA, or when Capadonna was beefing about his money, a lot of times it was just miscommunication.
Right.
Where if someone had picked up the phone, this nigga that I knew since I was 7 years old, now, I can't get in touch with him, he can't get in touch with me, don't nobody know where my $250,000 is. it ain't about people being shady. It's about you not communicating.
Right.
I got the 250 for you, bro. I'm waiting on some deals to go through. That's it. It ain't going to be here this month, like I told you, but it will be here. I promise you that.
Right.
Or I take your car. Yeah, I sold it to him for $2 million. I know I didn't tell you about it. You're absolutely right, bro. That may have been wrong in your eyes. Here's why I did it. All right, let's have a conversation about what you want to be compensated for.
Hey, but when it's millions involved, bro.
It's hard to do. No, that's hard to do. That's even harder than hard.
Like, I don't, like, bro, like, that's because that's when people – that's when it's every man for himself at that point. And everyone,
I gotta feed my family.
Everyone thinks that the other person is hiding something. No matter how transparent you are, someone is still going to think that there's something that you're not telling them. That's just how it works, dude. Like it, right. Because and usually it's because of outside influences in their ear that don't have a clue about how shit works. And that throws off how they think, and now they're looking at their homeboy like, damn, bro, you, man,
yeah,
really?
Somebody telling him, you ought to be getting this, man. You ought to be getting this. It ain't no way you didn't get this off it, bro. Like,
that's how
it
comes to an end.
Come on.
Like RZA, that was a questionable move by RZA. And look, listen, you can be a real dude and have one or two on your resume that was like, I don't know why you move like that.
But you know what I feel like, even after looking at that, what made it so bad is the motherfucker that they sold it to. Like
that didn't hurt it. I mean, that didn't help at all.
I ain't even really know about I smack Ghostface and them calling them by his real. Yeah. Like, man, get the fuck out of here.
Nah, he was a clown.
Man, come on.
They sold it to a clown. And when they was in the movie theater, though, and they was all talking about it, and they was shitting on it, and then RZA was sitting right there. The look on his face was pride.
Yeah,
he wanted to disappear like a motherfucker.
Yeah, and Method Man was like, that's another story for another day. Like, that shit didn't even exist.
I'm surprised they ain't really just hot at him.
Great documentary.
It was
a great documentary.
It was, and there are others. We'll see if it made one of our top three list. But first, we got a music break. We're going to tap in, Holiday Them Extra, all the way from Miami. What you got for us, bro?
This week, we got Currency featuring my man Jadakiss, Clear Part 2. Off of that Gran Turismo Currency and Static Selector album. Check it out.
Carry on, jet boarded, upon landing by luxury sedans, escorted to an offshore warehouse where all the imports and the exports is. Realize what this is and understand where you are. Respect what you've done in order to make it this far. That Rolls Royce I got is just a car I bought with some money that I made, cause I write down my thoughts and I get paid from the cradle to the grave. All we do is run the maze, trying to figure out a way to the cheese. Some niggas turn into rats when they feel the squeeze. Yeah. Your former home is wearing wires under their white tees. Watch them play. Praises to the Most High for being alive. Then burn one and let the smoke erase the negative vibes. And if your origin ain't right, you from a negative tribe. Is it the actual medication or the way it's prescribed? Puffing on the herbal. I don't do the rims or the tents.
We are back. That was Currency, Clear Part 2 featuring Jada. How you feel about that?
Currency got this shit down packed, man. I wish some people would call him for rap consulting and he just tell them how to just continuously do this shit. He got it, man. I like it. I like the album. Perfect feature from Jadakiss. Perfect summer music. I love it.
Yep. This is the whole sound of that Gran Turismo album. Fire is straight through, in my opinion. This song is a banger off of there. So, yeah, it's dope. And, again, for some reason, Currency surprises me every time he drops. I don't know why.
Love Currency.
Yeah, but dude is probably the most consistent, if not one of the most consistent artists in the game right now. I got to give it to him.
Yeah.
All props to Currency. Now, we're talking documentaries here, people. Top three. I've got three. You've got three. Maybe we got an honorable mention or two.
Maybe a wishful.
Maybe even some hopeful documentaries that we would like to see. So let's get straight to it. Give me one of your three favorite documentaries and why.
First and foremost, I would go with my number one, probably my it's my favorite not far as the content of all of it, but it probably has my number one, two hip-hop moment. When Dame Dash was on backstage and they were talking about the Def Jam, the jackets, the backstage photo. Like, first of all, the backstage DVD is what I'm talking about. That's my number one documentary. And the moment, what it made it was for me is when Dame Dash was snapping off on Def Jam.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be like Dame Dash at that point when I seen that. It was fire. Like, everything that he was talking about as far as representing with his company and going to battle with the big company and, like, y'all ain't never show us no love. We do it all ourselves anyway. Like, I just, for some reason, gravitated to what he talked about, which made that one of the biggest hip-hop moments for me.
Yep.
It'll go down in history for other people as well. It's very documented. People love it. And that was one of the times, that was when I first started appreciating Dame Dash. Like, we had seen the rap CEO before. I feel like Dane was kind of closer in age to us around that time. So it just, he kind of epitomized what I would want to be as a CEO.
Yeah, now he was, that gave us, first of all, that's a classic documentary, yes. Obviously. He gave us, that gave us a look behind the curtain a little bit in terms of what those boardrooms may look like and just the fact of how hard he was riding. Now, in hindsight, if we look at it, that probably is what got him out of there.
That is a fact. That is a absolute fact.
He probably could have approached it a little differently, but no, it was entertaining as fuck at worst. And yeah, that's a classic documentary. I'm not, come on now, everybody.
I appreciate
on, backstage, yeah. Like, stop.
That's facts. They had DMX on there, the whole Rough Riders versus Rockefeller.
But yep. The freestyle battle.
Yeah, the freestyle battle. In that situation with Dame, you have to always appreciate a person who tell you where they stand. Mm. And I think Dame is one of the best in the game at that, as far as, like, I ain't going to bullshit you. I'm going to let you know where I stand. So.
Yeah, no, that was the shit. Nah, ain't no question about that. And that was the behind-the-scenes look of the Hard Knock Life tour. Which I went to in Nashville. Shout out to Nashville. Jay came out with the Eddie George jersey on. It was lit.
Mm.
All right, my documentary.
It was in 95. What?
Man, she was old as hell.
Jesus Christ.
Man, my favorite documentary. I'm going to start off with my favorite, Tupac Resurrection. Mm. It's my 100% absolute favorite hip-hop documentary of all time.
It's really cheat code.
It's the GOAT.
You slick took all the good documentaries and show prep. You sent me, well, these are mine. Oh, you slick take all the top documentaries.
I can't help it. This shit is amazing. I've probably watched this 10 times easily. This is the quintessential Tupac. If you've got a little nephew or if you've got somebody older, maybe Mom Dukes or something that isn't really like, oh, I don't get the Tupac way. What is it? Pop this in and let them watch that and they're going to walk away like, oh, I get it now. Mm. And the fact that they were able to chop up his own vocals from his own interviews to tell the story and then not sound bootleg.
Choppy or anything
right.
Like
you can tell this a little bit. This may be from one interview. You can tell, but it was edited very well. And for to have him narrate his own story was not only eerie, but it was just a really dope representation of him. And I thought it was super accurate. You got a little bit of everything. You know what I'm saying? All facets of Tupac. He's a very complex person. You could have easily done a Roots-length documentary on him, three tapes long, been 5 hours long and shit, but I think they got enough information in this. Matter of fact, as we're talking about it, I need to watch it again. I ain't seen it in about 2 years. I need to run it back. That shit is fire. If you haven't seen it and you're listening to this podcast, which means you fuck with hip-hop, you need to go get to that ASAP. I'll send you my DVD.
I don't believe you still got the DVD from
Absolutely. No, I definitely still got the DVD.
Yeah, that's one of the best documentaries I feel like has ever been done. I'm a big Tupac fan. If you are a big Tupac fan, then you're familiar with this and you know that. Like the narration with his voice was an awesome add to it. Like it's very dope that they were able to do that. And I remember it came out in theaters, right?
I saw it. In
I remember going to see that in the theaters and how packed it was, and just like how engaged and how everybody was wanted to see it. It wasn't no talking back to the screen. It was like people were locked on to every word.
Yep.
And I agree with you. If you want somebody to try and understand the big with Tupac, why was he this? Why was he that? Listening to that in his own words was just that's something that can fully, well, not fully explain, but kind of give you an idea as to how he encaptured so many people.
That's the best Tupac content that you're gonna find, period.
Other than Me Against the World.
Well, I'm referring to movies.
Video. Okay, gotcha.
Yes, not albums.
Okay.
What you got? What's your second favorite?
My next one is going to be, because this sort of hit with me like the Wu-Tang would hit with the guys up north when they start listening to this, and this is The Art of Organized Noise.
Mm-hmm.
Telling the story of the Dungeon Family producers, Rico Wade, Sleepy mm-hmm. Brown, and, mm-hmm. and just going, and Ray Murray, I don't want to forget Ray, and just going into how they created a sound for the South when the sound hadn't really been established. You had Ghetto Boys and you had Scarface prior to them, but when you have Outkast and you have Dungeon Family, that's a whole nother Goody Mob, conscious rap type, Southern Steel Fly, playlistic type thing to play off the album that wasn't being done before. They took a lot of soul added it to the music, made it digestible for people who didn't like the boom bap rap, which is why, you know, I didn't gravitate to Wu-Tang and the stuff that sounded too New Yorkish. It's because I had this soulful, slow down alternative over beats that I liked and that more were a southern attitude. So The Organized Noise really opened up a lot of doors as far as seeing things being behind the scenes with Outkast, the early days of Who Was All in the Dungeon Family, Goody Mob, CeeLo, early days, early Future, Meathead, and all of the stuff that they kind of contributed to everybody's favorite Southern artists, the T.I.'s, the Killer Mikes, Outkast as a whole, Scarface, Rick Ross, all of those people kind of came from the tree of what Organized Noise did and making Southern rap what it was.
Yeah, that's a solid documentary. It put me up on a lot of game about their influence, which it shouldn't be denied that you got to remember they've also done like R&B shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It ain't even just limited to rap. So Organized Noise, they're popping. We were lucky enough to hit Combat Jack interview when they were being interviewed with
really
them
good.
Down here in Atlanta. That was super dope.
Rico
great
Way,
experience.
Sleeping.
Rico Way got stories for days.
Days
and days and days. That's not going to fit in one documentary
Rico
or
Way
one interview.
Said, Rico Way said that they originated Making It Rain. He said, this was a story from the live podcast. He said, I literally used to go to the bank and get $10,000. He said, we was making so much money back when Outkast first started popping and stuff. He said, I used to go to the bank, get $10,000 out every day. Every day before I got my day started, I would get 10 racks out the bank. And we'd go to the strip club, we'd eat wings and throw the money up in the sky. And go to the mall, get fresh, whatever we had left, we'd throw the shit up in the air. He said, this was before people was making it rain. This was like 92, 93?
Early in the game.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah, nah. Shout out to that documentary. That's a good one. Is that still on Netflix, I wonder?
I don't know. I think it is.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't looked at it in a while, but I think it is.
Y'all find that if y'all not up on that. My second one. Going Jay-Z again. I know you had Backstage, so I've got to take the other one, man. Fade to Black. Jay's easily one of my favorite rappers, and one of his favorite albums of mine is the Black Album. That was billed as his last album.
Right.
It was going to be his retirement, his swan song. The album chronicles the making, excuse me, the documentary chronicles the making of that album, as well as his show at MSG. The behind the scenes look at him in the studio was crazy. Seeing his face when he first heard that Dirt Off Your Shoulders beat, hearing Pharrell tell the inspiration behind Allure. You know what I'm saying? Like even Kanye telling him how he wanted to do Encore and how he wanted that to kind of roll out and how he wanted to structure the song and shit. Like that shit, that's behind the curtain, fly on the wall shit that you never get to see.
Yeah.
And you see that with someone on the caliber of Jay-Z's level who will probably go down as the GOAT when it's all said and done if he's not already that. It's a must-see, even if you're a part Jay fan. That's a must-see. That album is a classic. How many times, like, I can't even think of another album that has a documentary that shows the making of it that's a classic like that. That's on that level. I think, shout out to the Nas fans, I think Illmatic has something similar, but I've never seen it, so I don't know if they've got actual in-studio footage of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, this had in-studio footage of making some of the fire dopest Jay-Z songs ever.
Right.
So that shit is, that documentary is super dope. I haven't watched it in a while. I need to double back. That's my second favorite documentary, easy.
I think one of the most fascinating things about these documentaries with Jay is people knowing he doesn't write.
Mm-hmm.
When you see him first listen to the Timbaland beat, when you see the look on his face. And like
man,
the,
that
when,
shit was crazy.
Was it Pharrell or Kanye that came in with the Allure beat?
That was Pharrell.
And he was like, I could not make the album. Who was saying I could not make the album? You talking about this is going to be the last album? Was it Pharrell?
Yeah, that was Pharrell. And he was like, this is your Godfather.
Oh, my
yeah, that shit.
God. That scene right there was fucking fire. Yeah,
even him.
And then the Allure came on. Come on.
And
man.
It was everything that Pharrell described it to
be. Yeah, and it was there with doom, 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 doom. Jay was like, shit, this nigga wasn't lying. Just to see the look on the creator's face when he's creating like that shit is like priceless. And I was very appreciative as a Jay-Z fan of him letting us in on this. I think it's one of the best documentaries. And like you said, taking us through a classic piece of art.
Yeah.
Like putting us in a booth with him, letting us see his expressions, his initial expressions when he first hears
it.
That's something that you can, like you say, to be a fly on the wall for that. That's always dope.
And you can find those clips on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
Easy. What you got?
Mine.
What's your third one?
Is a cheat code kind of, so it's not a singular, but it's the Beef 3 documentary.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, that count.
And I tell you what we had on there. This is was Twista versus Bone.
You could have left that one out.
Chingy versus Nelly. Do you remember the Chingy versus Nelly beat?
Yeah, I do.
Lil Scrappy versus the Orlando Police. I don't even remember that part, to be honest.
You can skip that.
But the reason why we're here, Ludacris versus T.I. as well. Okay. Yeah,
it was nah, right. That was popping.
It was all right. I mean, it was,
yeah. That was popping.
Lil Flip versus T.I.
That was classic.
That was classic. Classic TV, DVD, classic beef. Listen to Clifford Harris talk about beating him up, the chasing around the car, like classic. All of it. God, that was good, man. That was fucking good. And I'm a big T.I. fan. We never heard from Lil Flip again after that. No. Don't know what happened to Lil Flip. I think he just put an album out last week. Who knows?
Yeah.
But just the whole is like being immersed in that and being able to see what T.I. was thinking. And T.I. a funny dude, man. Even when he ain't trying to be funny at all, like T.I. funny as hell. And just to hear him talk about this Lil Flip beef and to see how it played out, the whole leprechaun outfit shit, like it's fucking.
Don't sleep on Lil Flip was funny.
Lil Flip
that,
was funny.
No, he was funny.
He was.
Okay, gangster.
All right, gangster with the big gold. Like, I give it to him. But that was probably my favorite part of it. You also had the game when he was beefing with Yuck Mouth or who knows what.
Yeah.
And the game when he was beefing with G-Unit with the G-Unit shit. That was really good. The game, like I said, he'd been doing this shit for years. He'd been clout chasing and fucking knowing how to stay in the limelight for doing absolutely nothing with rapping for years. And this was like to that. I think this was a classic DVD. This is when you used to go to the bootleg, man, and you were looking for the DVDs.
You need that new smack. I need that new beef.
I need all of that. What did French have? What was the shit that French had? I can't even think of the name of his.
Somebody's
right
yelling
now.
At. Oh, fuck. I can't remember.
I can't think of the name of it. With French DVDs, like all of those.
That's going to bother me.
This was during that time, and I just this just brings up memories even looking at the clips from it. So that's mine, the Beef 3.
Yeah, no, the Beef series. And what was that on BET? Was that just the series
broken
up?
Yeah, they
kind
of like spinned off of it, yeah, but they kind of fucked it up. As BET is known to do.
Nah, that's whack,
man. As BET is known to do.
Man, I know, shout out to my guy, Big Jeff. I know he is screaming at us for them French Montana DVDs. I know he is about to crash his damn car right now off of that shit, but I can't remember what it is. Maybe we'll get that when we get back to the break. Right. My last one is probably the most recent out of all of the ones we've talked about, the Defiant ones on HBO. HBO or Showtime, I can't remember. That told the story of Jimmy Iovine, who of course runs Interscope, and Dr. Dre. And it tells their story separately, and then it combines them when they meet in the mid-90s and takes it from there on to how they came up with beats and all of that type of shit. And there's so much throwback footage in there. I'm talking about throwback NWA shit, in studio shit, a lot of things that we had never seen before. Let me speak for myself. A lot of things that I had never seen before. And when you mix that in with the modern day cinematic camera work that they had in there, it just worked on all levels. And to see where a cat like Dre has come from to now, knowing what we know now and to where he ended up, that shit is bananas. It's a 4-part series. It was phenomenal. It was everything. Like that yeah. Almost kicked off. If I'm thinking correctly, that may have kind of kicked off the more modern day documentary that we have today.
I was just about to say
the series, yeah, that kind broken of up
the series broken up and the like direct like fly on the wall, not just sitting across from somebody and them telling the story, but like right there with Dre, right there with Jimmy Iovine as they were coming up with ideas and stuff and then kind of flipping that to something in the past like they did with the Wu-Tang documentary. That kind of, I think, set that format. The format's fire. They bodied it, just knowing some stuff about Jimmy Iovine that we didn't know. And also Dre, some of the stuff about Dre. That's probably one of my favorites as well. I need to double back on that. I haven't looked at that in a while, so I definitely want to watch that.
Yeah, that shit was amazing. Cocaine City was the name of
Cocaine.
The
I thought it was Coke Boys. I was going to say Cocaine City, you're right.
Yeah. That Defiant Ones is a must-watch TV. Honorable mention for me, I'm going to say Can't Stop, Won't Stop, the Puff Bad Boy documentary on Apple that chronicled the behind the scenes of the 20th anniversary Bad Boy tour. That was super dope.
That was really
Rapture on Netflix. Two of my favorite episodes was 2 Chainz and the T.I. episode. Showed 2 Chainz putting the tour on even though he fucked his leg up. I gained a whole new respect for 2 Chainz and how he continued to do the tour. And it also spoke about T.I.'s activism and stuff. And then my final one is Murder Rap, which is the Tupac and Biggie cases kind of, for me, wrapped up in a nutshell. The cop who was kicked off of the case pretty much solved both of them, and in doing so, he even addressed some of the top conspiracies. He explained why those weren't true, and then he went into what actually is to believe to have happened with receipts and the whole nine. So Murder Rap, to me, my mind was blown watching that documentary.
You're convinced that he knows he did it.
Yeah, no, that was it. Yeah, no, it was it. Because he brought the receipts, and he had proof, and he had multiple people saying the same thing that didn't know each other in different rooms, and it all of the stories start to connect, and it pretty much laid out what happened.
It's the Crip dude that did it. That's what he said, right?
The dude that they beat up. Yeah, Orlando. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, he was a trigger man, yeah. But that's a classic. Y'all need to watch that. Any honorable mentions?
Honorable mentions for me. Moments in one, when Boosie was counting the money, he said, "You see a 20-ounce pussy."
We need Yeah.
By like, yeah, and he was throwing it on the ground. I think it was on a Smack DVD. I'm not sure. BMF Smack DVD. Mm. When Meech was talking about, like, we don't fight over nothing. The world is ours. That's, I think, what put BMF on the map to the underground the mainstream, and then it put him on the map as far as the feds as
exactly.
Well, which got them in
jail. Yeah, we get snacks in the Range Rover.
Yeah, all of that. Yep. But another honorable mention, and one that I feel like had too many for me to put on mine, but the Noisy series.
Oh, yeah, those are pretty good. A lot of people don't like those, though. They say they exploit them.
But the reason that I would say it now is that I would want people that haven't seen it to check it out and see what they think. Do they think it's exploitive? Mm. The Noisy Atlanta, the Noisy Chicago, the Noisy Compton.
Bay Area.
Compton, and then they did one in the Bay Area, too. Yeah, all of those are... That's good TV. Regardless if you think it's being exploitive or not, I think it's coming from a place to give you information, gives you good information, lets those guys talk. Trouble had a great scene on it.
Yep.
The one in Atlanta could have been a little bit exploitive. I see when they did the McConan and the Gucci Man thing and the Gucci Twin, whatever them dudes' name was. But there's some moments in those documentaries that are really good and put really good information out there, namely when they're in Compton and they're doing the Hood Kitchen stuff and they're talking to Kendrick Lamar
the
friend,
Thug Kitchen.
The Thug Kitchen. Yeah. And they're talking to Kendrick Lamar friends, B, who he grew up with, and he was talking about how he, you know, growing up being a rap superstar is your best friend, but he's just Kendrick Lamar to me.
That was dope.
It was some dope shit, and especially those. So if you're going to start with any of them, start with the one out in Compton. Work your way to the Atlanta one, and you're going to – it's some good TV.
Nah, that's a fact. Any documentary you need that we're missing that we haven't gotten yet?
Man, I was listening to Bun B on Bomani The Right Time with Bomani Jones, and he was talking about how people would always ask him about Outkast, ask him about A-Ball and MJG.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be a documentary chronicling, like, Southern hip-hop roots. So if we start with the Ghetto Boys and you do A-Ball, MJG, UGK, and the Hot Boys, Outkast. And kind of, like, just go through how all of them were popping at the same time. But they never really worked with each other. And just, I feel like that'll be fire.
Yeah, because they were all around the same. Well, I mean, not Ghetto Boys a little bit earlier, but Hot Boys, Outkast, A-Ball, MJG, UGK, those are pretty much around the same.
And Bun said we never ran into A-Ball and MJG for like a long time.
Yep.
Like, it was never like, no, it wasn't no beef or anything. It was just like we were never on the same bills. We were never in the same cities at the same time. People usually, when they booked us, they would book us one after one another or something like that, but never on the same show. So
that would be
feel like that would be a dope documentary just to follow their similar roles and how they almost probably did this and did that. Because 3-6 should be another one that should be in there with them, because they were talking about, Bun was talking about the 3-6 album that they were supposed to do. It was
Underground Mafia,
Sipping on Some Scissor was going to be on there, and a couple other songs that they hadn't put out. So I just feel like that would have been a fire documentary just chronicling Southern hip-hop groups.
Yeah, one that I need right now, and I remember a couple years ago Kim K mentioned this, that Kanye has videotaped all of his albums, and he's got that footage on deck that he's never put out. Can you picture? We just talked about how we don't have many classic albums that are have in studio. Can you picture the sessions in Hawaii with that My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy?
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, nigga, what are you sitting on that? When are you going to put that out? When you're on your deathbed? I need that now.
Regardless of how you feel about, that's TV that you would
we got to see that. We got to see that. Even I'm College Dropout. Because think of the...
Any one of them.
Yeah, really any one of them. Think of the Ye... Because think of Ye in College Dropout mode versus where he was at on the level in My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. That's a different person. You know what I'm saying? So, like, just kind of seeing the more... The timid, but he was still kind of talking shit, even though he hadn't really accomplished much at the time. But you see the confidence coming from him there. And then you kind of see him orchestrating that My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, which a lot of people call...
masterpiece together.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He putting that together with all those different acts and stuff. Like, we need that foot. Like, I don't know what hard drive that's sitting on. Like, but make sure that motherfucker's working. In, you know what I'm saying? It's in good condition. Yeah, do not lose that and somebody steal it. That need to be in a safe. Locked off in the cut. Because we need to see that documentary ASAP.
Am I wrong? Didn't the Blueprint 3 have a documentary? Am I wrong?
If it did, I don't know why they just one. I don't know why they would decide to document that album. And
for some reason, I remember Jay like in Hawaii or some shit, and they was doing like the sessions over there. He was that shit. I don't know what that was. It
sound forgettable.
Maybe something else. It was.
The Carter has a documentary though. Wayne.
Lil Wayne's.
Yep. Yep. I forgot about that. He does have one. It didn't make a lot of noise. Yeah, it didn't make a lot of noise. So that probably means it's really not that good. Probably. But yeah, it may be worth investigating. Somebody let us know what that Carter hitting on.
We might have to double back and talk about some of the vlogs, some of the best vlogs that we've seen too.
Yeah, for sure.
YouTube show or something.
Y'all let us know in the rap chat on Facebook, man. What's some of your favorite hip hop documentaries? Give us your top three.
Let's hear it.
We'd appreciate that. Now we've got a second music break. M Extra, if you're not too wasted down there in MIA, what you got?
Second song of the week. It's my boy London J checking in with you, featuring that boy Tip. It's the Kang. London J featuring Tip. You got to be the woman I thought. Because of that, I'm about to wallow if the chain got caught. Damn. You look like a woman that should really be put on. So you're naked, no flaws if it were very little. Hey, all I want to do is put my tongue in the middle. Hum on it for you, let you come on my dental. I swear I'm fucking with momentum. Don't want to break nobody hard accidental. But I had a song that was on when I last seen you and I get sentimental. She, cause I belong in the kennel. A dog ass nigga finna haul out with a bad bitch somewhere where your phone ain't finna work. Satellite location, home bed tunnel. We are back. That was London J with you featuring T.I. How you feel about London J?
My boy T.I. has to be more selective with who he lends out his verses to in 2019. I understand that London J is on Hustle Gang.
For sure.
He's trying to make his career do whatever it's going to do, but this ain't it, bro. Ain't it.
Now, this song was all right.
Nah, not for night, bro.
It was all right.
If it's quiet.
Which is quiet
right now.
Right now.
And the summer is about to happen, and you bring me this?
Yeah.
I'm highly upset at whoever is A&R and like whatever's going on at Grand Hustle, because this ain't it.
Yeah. Like, this it, ain't was it. Right. It was all right.
They need to call Young Dro or somebody that got hits under their belt, get them in the studio, and try again, because this ain't it.
If you waiting on Young Dro to get to the studio now.
Somebody.
You cancel Christmas.
You gonna
give
me London J?
Hey, man. If you can't find Dro, you got to settle for London J.
No. Spoted, nobody ain't around.
Man, it's rough over at Hustle Gang right now.
Where Five Mics at, man?
In that instance. Let's talk Drake, man. Question of the week before we get Ghost. Drake's presence at the NBA playoffs. He's been front and center at the Toronto games.
Young Aubrey.
We can expect more of him because they actually made it to the finals. He even went as far as doing a post-game interview that actually made it to SportsCenter. Drake, the artist. And hasn't played a lick of basketball ever in life.
His life.
Is this exposure doing more bad than good for Drake?
It's doing way more good than bad. And the reason being, I listen to Dan Patrick daily. I've been listening to Dan Patrick. Dan Patrick's a sportcast. He used to be on NBC.
Yep.
He probably knows two hip-hop artists. He talked about Drake for 3 days on his nationally syndicated podcast. He reaches out to everybody. And he admitted that he didn't know a Drake song, which I feel like he was flogging.
Clearly.
But people have been talking about Drake. He's been on SportsCenter. Like, they've been talking about him on SportsCenter, like, every hour on the hour. And Drake said he was taking a break this year, and that was taking a break for music. I think that he's going to continue to capitalize and figure out, all right, I don't have to even go to the studio. What I'm going to do is make these waves where people are looking, people are talking. The NBA Finals, the most popular sport on social media is the NBA. They get more engagement than the NFL, MLS, anybody else. They get all the engagement on social media. So if the finals are going on, the Eastern Conference Finals are going on, I'm sitting right here courtside. I want people talking about me. He finding out Drake is being brilliant at marketing without doing his day job, and that's right. rapping, what he's best at, which was rapping. Now you look up and you're seeing him everywhere. They talking about him everywhere. He's all over SportsCenter. Is Drake good or bad for the game? Great for me if I'm Drake and OVO. I don't care what y'all think. If I'm great or bad, I'm walking. And he plays into it, too. Like, the nigga was dressed like Tupac from Above the Rim for Game 6. Like, Drake is ultimate troll. He's corny, but he knows how to do it well. Like, anybody that hates on him or says it, like, man, I don't like that. Like, what you can't like hip-hop, because it's like this is what it's about. Like, putting yourself on Front Street, making a dollar off your name, and he ain't got to work hard at it.
First of all, for those that don't remember, he's a global ambassador for the Toronto Raptors.
He works for them.
Yeah, technically, he works for them. So that's one reason of course, he'd get them seats anyway, obviously, but He's also working with Toronto in that aspect. That's why he's on stage, outside in the little park or whatever. But anyway, this is 100% working in his favor. What people don't realize, though, is that in game 5, or maybe game 4 in Toronto, that actually kind of got this brewing a little bit, because he was rubbing the coach's shoulders and doing all that. That hoodie he had on was a new collaboration with the clothing line D Squared. That's a new drop that just happened the other day. That hoodie is $589. And I have seen Drake in that hoodie on the sidelines in the media cycle for the last 72 hours, dude.
Top story.
If you think that them hoodies didn't sell the fuck out immediately, or if they haven't completely out, they damn near sold out, you're fooling yourself, dude. And that's all super dope marketing for free. Promo for free. I ain't got to put no single out, no album out. It doesn't matter. I can prance up and down the sidelines like I'm Spike Lee, because we've all seen it before. We've seen Spike Lee do shit.
People have done
play
this before.
Play with the players and shit.
People
so
play into this. This
is perfect for him. We see other people trying to copy. We saw you, Gucci Man. Nice try.
Yeah, nice try, Gucci Man.
Man, listen. And that's your man.
If I'm E-40, I got my people on the phone right now. Yep. Look, every Warriors thing, like, y'all, I want to do interviews. He already sit courtside. He been doing it for a couple of years. They're going to be looking for, all right, Drake's a popular rapper over here. Mainstream America and media is going to be looking for the rival to that. E-40 and been right there holding it down.
It's not going to be E-40.
I would have my people on that if I were E-40. But
y'all better call somebody else.
I don't know if he can hold it up.
No, he can't.
Like, I don't know that.
Shout out to E-40. He's a legend and all of that. But if you
he been there.
You think he gonna get SportsCenter and Dan Patrick coverage?
He done been on that before. I don't know about Dan Patrick. Yeah, but he's been on SportsCenter before E-40.
It was a slow news day on that day. Shout out to E-40. That's my guy.
He's gonna be right there. The Drake and E-40 song is coming.
We don't need that either.
It's coming. I'm telling you.
I'll pass. Before we get out of here, on Decker of the Week is everybody who RSVP'd. Shout out to all of y'all.
Everybody who sold the show out.
All 5,000 of y'all.
Yeah, appreciate that. Stadium status.
No, but we appreciate that. Again, follow our Instagrams and Twitters at On Deck TV Podcast for information. Maybe some more seats pop up.
Maybe some giveaways start to happen. Maybe you start seeing merch. Maybe.
You never know.
All of these things are about to happen. So stay tuned to the On Deck TV Podcast Instagram page. Stay tuned to the On Deck TV Podcast Twitter page. Continue to watch the YouTube videos. Like I said, we may even go live, ask a hip hop trivia question, and give you a bottle of
you never know
for it, whatever it may be. We're just trying to do a big build up to episode 300. We want to get some momentum going into it. We want the On Deckers to help us with that. So with that being said, you're going to see a lot more activity from us. So make sure you guys join us in that activity, and you'll get some cool things from it.
100%. Now, before we get out of here, some new music out. Of course, YG For Real For Real. Y'all check that out. Let us know what you think. Moneybag Yo, Forever Heartless. That's not bad. It's good gym music. Mm. If you're on a treadmill or something, elliptical.
Mm. Everybody from Memphis sounded like starting to me.
It's starting to sound like it. I mean, but Moneybag Yo is a little repetitive in the shit he be talking about.
He sound like Dolph to me.
Nah, not quite.
His last album, he kind of sounded like Dolph.
Possible. Also, coming out this week, this Friday, Denzel Curry. We played his joint the other week, Ricky. He's got a new tape called Zoo. It's coming out. Z-U-U is how it's spelled. So I'm interested to see what that's hitting on. Should be pretty good. Other than that, it's pretty slow. Unless somebody drops under this holiday weekend.
Surprise holiday album.
You never know. What do you got on deck for the holiday? You cooking out? What you going to do?
No, absolutely not. Man, I'm chilling. I'm trying to get my rest in. Working on work. Plan, plot, strategize. You about to hit the PJ?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I gotta get on the tarmac.
Get on the tarmac?
If that's what it, I don't even know if that's called. No. But get on the PJ.
Got a car taking you down there?
Yeah, all that. Gotcha. Yeah, the Uber Black.
Uber I Black. Think
that's,
X.
Yeah, that's
X
the one.
X or Black?
Yeah, Black. Yeah. That's the one. None of that shit. I will be on a flight though. Going to Milan. It should be fun.
Going to Milan.
Never been to Italy.
Nice.
This will be good. Eat some pizza. What they eat? Pasta and shit. What is that?
I think the Italians do eat pasta.
There we go.
They call it gravy.
What?
Spaghetti sauce, they call it gravy, not marinara sauce.
Nah, that's some sauce.
Have some culture while you're there. call the marinara sauce gravy.
I don't think I'll be doing that shit.
I got some Gucci for you to fit in.
I don't need it. I can't fit any of that shit. I don't want any of that European cut shit. I can't do it.
You're right about that.
Again, y'all holler at us on Facebook, Instagram, and leave a comment on iTunes. Follow the YouTube, youtube.com/OnDeckTVPodcast.
Y'all subscribe to the YouTube page. As a matter of fact,
okay,
there's a way that you could do a giveaway on YouTube. If you guys subscribe and you comment on the pictures or something like that, we'll select a comment.
Okay.
And we will give you a free bottle.
On this episode.
Of one of the sponsors.
They got a comment on this episode.
You have to comment on this episode. We will select a comment from whatever comments are there, and we will send you, we'll get your information.
For sure.
And we will send you a bottle of our official 300th episode live On Deck TV sponsored alcohol.
All right.
That's what we'll do.
Fair enough.
All right.
We'll see y'all next week, man. Episode 302. Holla.
Good morning. Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.